So we really do sit side by side with our clients at the IRS throughout the life cycle of a case. And those of you who do casework would obviously see that and be familiar with counsel attorneys playing a role throughout, again, the life cycle of a case. So I'll talk a little bit more about the organizational structure, because those attorneys that really work with cases that you may be interacting with more out in the field are going to be on the right-hand side, those blue boxes in our org chart, and principally in our three litigating divisions, which line up with the organizational structure of the IRS. So we have our LB&I counsel with Robin Greenhouse, again, lined up with the LB&I organization on the client side for taxpayers with assets over $10 million. We've got the SBSE counsel, and that again lines up with the small business and self-employed division of the IRS, advising the clients there in examinations and litigating SBSE cases. And then our third litigating division is the tax exempt and government entities organization, which litigates, as you might imagine, exempt organization cases and some employment tax cases as well. So those are our three litigating divisions. One interesting note, which I didn't fully appreciate before coming on board here, is that the vast majority of our tax court dockets, so the ones you read about coming out of the tax court, the vast majority of the statutory notices of deficiency actually don't come from the development of correspondence or office audits. They come from more automated under-reporter type automated issues. So, and those are largely handled by the Wage and Investment Division over at the IRS, which we don't have a parallel to. But when those cases get into docketed status and a petition is filed, those are handled by our SBSE litigating divisions as well. So that SBSE division counsel does serve sort of a dual role of working with the SBSE, small business and self-employed cases, as well as that fairly large pipeline of cases that come through the AUR program, automated under-reporter notices, smaller, mostly individual taxpayers, obviously. So of our 1,500 attorneys that Maxine mentioned, on the right-hand side of this chart here, the blue boxes are about 1,000 of those attorneys, our field attorneys, mostly in 50 offices around the country. We do have a field office here in Washington, D.C. as well, a geographic office, but again, mostly in field offices around the country. So complementing that, on the left-hand side of our org chart are technical offices under Bill Paul, who's my deputy for technical. And that is six technical offices organized by subject matter. Their principal function and the principal focus of their work, at least since I've been on board, is drafting regulations and other guidance for publication in the Internal Revenue Bulletin. In large part in recent years, has been focused on implementing the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, most comprehensive reform of our tax law in about a generation. So a considerable amount of time has been spent by these six offices getting the guidance out to implement the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. These are also the offices that you would go to if you are requesting a private letter ruling. They are often also involved to give higher level technical advice or deeper technical advice to pending examinations. So they will sometimes be called upon by the field counsel attorneys for very discrete technical issues, complex issues. And we're seeing a lot of that now with Tax Cuts and Jobs Act as those issues start to be reported on tax returns and new statute questions come up and the field counsel attorneys refer back to and lean on our technical offices for input on new statutes. And I'll talk a little bit more about exactly what we're doing on that front as well, in particular, implementation of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So that is a very quick overview of the work that our office, the structure of our office, I should say, which I think hopefully will set a little bit of the context for the comments I'm going to talk about in those three areas identified. So Elizabeth, if you could switch to the next slide. The first area I mentioned I wanted to talk about was the work we've been doing over the last 8 or so months to help the country respond to the COVID-19 pandemic. And this has been probably the highest order of priority for obvious reasons for us. And this is something that the IRS has been very heavily involved in and played a key role in delivering the economic relief that Congress provided for in the CARES Act and the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. So those two new statutes, both enacted back in March, have been a key focus of our efforts at counsel and advising the IRS clients that we have. In addition to the statutory provisions, on the administrative side, we have taken advantage of existing authority, mainly under Section 7508 Cap A, which provides for extensions in the event of natural disasters and declarations of disasters and emergencies by the president. So we did have a nationwide emergency declaration, I should say, by the president back in March, which triggered our ability to provide relief under Section 7508 Cap A. So I won't get into too much of the detail on that, but I think folks are probably well aware of the extensions that we gave, not only for filing and payment of taxes up to July 15th, but also through dozens and hundreds of other time-sensitive provisions under the tax law. But again, our focus here and my discussion is probably more on what we've done to implement the legislative provisions in the CARES Act and the Families First Act that were signed into law back in March. And those people are probably familiar with. I've listed a couple of them here, the key ones on this slide. The employee retention credit that our Triple E group has been working on. A number of business tax provisions, Section 172, the NOL provisions. Modifications to bonus depreciation and some modifications to the interest expense limitation rules under Section 163J, modifications to changes made in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. A number of other provisions in the CARES Act that are intended to provide economic relief are being administered by other agencies within the government and are not principally tax provisions, but do have key and important tax components to them. The Paycheck Protection Program being the most obvious example that has a debt relief element to it. So that has required us to issue some guidance on the debt relief element of the Paycheck Protection Program, another one that we've been working on.